don't get in my way, don't get in my way. Ho-ho, I'm wild, and I'm ready, and I'm loaded for bear. I'm ready to go, and I'm ready to move. Let's go, Walt. Hey, Walt, Walt, get going there. I'm ready, don't move. He always sings, oh, raggedy music to the cattle as he swings. Back and forward in the saddle on a horse, pretty good horse. Syncopated, gated into such a funny mood. To hear the roar of his repeater, how they run, oh. When they hear this fella goes, you look a western, folks all know. Wah, wah, the highfalutin, hootin, hootin, son of a gun from Arizona. Ragtime cowboy, oh, what a cowboy. Ragtime cowboy, Joe, all together now. Quack, quack, all together now. Horse, pretty good horse, syncopated, gated, and there's such a funny meter to the roar of his repeater, how they run, ho-ho, when they hear that fella's gun, cause the western folks all know. He's highfalutin, lootin', son of a gun from Arizona, ragtime cowboy, oh, what a cowboy, ragtime cowboy, Joe. Quack, quack. All right, let's go. You want to try some head bobbing? Okay, gang, that's enough. You should learn to ration your talents. Just give it to them gradually there, just a little bit at a time, because man's only got one lifetime, folks. He's got what F. Scott Fitzgerald used to call his emotional and his talent bank. And when you have made your last withdrawal on that emotional and that talent bank, Walt, there ain't no going back. There's no place to go. Oh, he always sings raggedy music to the cattle as he swings back and forward in the saddle on a horse, pretty good horse, set a syncopated, gated, and there's such a funny meter to the roar of his repeater. How they run, because his western folks... Okay. All right, enough of that fooling around now. Once again, we are going to have to plunge right into it. We're going to have to look at the face of the obelisk. The monolithic face. Well, that's a good word, obelisk. It's very good. Cleopatra's needle. We are going to have to look into the face of that monolithic structure. That writhing, sneaky, Hieronymus Bosch structure. Hissing, boiling, seething. Man, us. How do you like being mankind? As opposed to, say, squirrel kind or turtle kind. Really, is that, don't you figure that you've kind of made it? Think of all the things you could have been. A toad. Well, you know, some people I know are toads, but I mean a real toad, a rotten little old warty toad flubbing around down there in the bushes. You know what toads do when you pick them up. Oh, you don't know about toads, do you? Well, it's the same thing that little puppies do occasionally when you pick them up wrong, and babies that aren't housebroken. Only toads do it more creatively. All together, Walt, once more. Let's sing. Let's sing now. Number 17 in the book. Number 17. He always sings. Ha-ha! Raggedy music to the cattle as he swings. Back and forward in the saddle on the horse. Pretty good horse. Syncopated, gated, and there's such a funny meter to the roar of his repeater. How they run, ho-ho, when they hear that fellow's gun, because western folks all know. He's the son of a gun, a rootin' tootin' suitin' up with a little bit of Arizona. Ragtime, 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 cowboy. Boy Joe. Pow, 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 pow. Quack, quack. Rick-a-tick-tick. 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 All right, that's enough of that. You've got to ration your talent. You just can't give it to them all at once. You don't shoot your whole business in the first act, I'll tell you. Yes, this is... We're doing this one especially, this... This piece of dynamic trivia here in the beginning for all the deep thinkers in the philosophical club at Monmouth College. Philosophers have been head thumping forever and ever and ever and ever. And some of them have B flat heads, others have the heavy bass, sonorous, timpani head. But like all heads, they is hollow just like the rest of us. Let's go, Walt. Okay. Oh, you don't know that at one time I had a considerable reputation among a large group of fans in the fourth grade for my uncanny ability to reproduce Clyde McCoy's trumpet. Yes, with my lips. I could blow it on my... Wah! And I used to do a thing on Sugar Blues that was that brought them down at the PTA every time I ever used it. You remember that, Walt, don't you? Sugar Blues, Clyde McCoy, that trumpet. Is there anybody else out there who has had like folk talent? Oh, sure. I know a guy that can imitate Jackie Gleason, imitating Sid Caesar. And I know, yeah, that's the truth. I have all kinds of friends. Always, as far as I can think back, there was always a friend or two who had a magnificent folk talent. And I remember one uncle, for example, who could tear the Chicago Municipal Phone Directory in half. And they would build the entire party around him. Sure they would. Somebody would be, somebody brings the beer. Somebody else brings the pretzel and the cheese. Well, somebody would be asked to bring the phone book for this uncle. It's true. It was Uncle Charles. And there would be a moment, you know, right after the fourth or fifth beer had been served and they've had the cheese and they played a couple of hands of pinochle and they've danced some dances and there's been one fist fight, you know, that kind of thing. And somebody would say, all right now, everybody quiet now. Everybody, all right, all of you sit down now. Everybody sit down. Sit down now, everybody. And my old man would do his famous imitation of a trumpet voluntary. And then someone would say, okay now, all set now? Are you ready in there, Charles? You all set in there, Charles? He would be in the bedroom, say, putting on his leopard skin thing that he always wore. Yeah, he wore this thing. He had a phony leopard skin, you know, like Tarzan wears it. Comes out. That's the truth. I'm telling you the absolute truth. And he would come out wearing galoshes. That was always considered a big thing to wear galoshes with a leopard skin thing, you know, that Tarzan would wear. They'd holler, all right, y'all sit in there, Charles. And then my old man would go to Phil again. And then the crowd would say, all right, let's go. Come on, Charles. And they got the beer. They want to get back to the pinochle. And then you would hear a rattle and a rustle and a bang, boom, and out he would come out of the door. And he's got, in one hand, he's got a great big Chicago phone book. And in the other hand, a thing full of beer. He'd hold the beer up and he would go, Tarzan's fantastic scream to his mate. Or the raging, roaring, mating cry of a bull gorilla in the deeps of the Orinoco jungle. And then he would put the beer down and he would put the Chicago phone book down and he would beat his chest. And of course, my old man's going, da 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 da. Well, then it would be about, yeah, I'm just describing to you simple folk rites that go on at simple folk parties. Well, then Uncle Charles would mess his hair all up. It would stick up. He had patent leather hair, you know. And when it was all mixed up, it stuck up like a lot of phonograph needles all over. Uncle Carl, who always occupied the center of every party with his banjo and his false teeth, he could make them click. He could make his false teeth click when he's playing Nola on the banjo. He would accompany himself on the bones, you know, by clicking his false teeth. Yeah. He'd make them go. He did it with his tongue. It was very interesting. They were relief false teeth. He got them from the relief, and they didn't fit good. But they had a great click. Carl was all... Performers are always jealous, you know. He would always say, come on, let's go, Charles. We want to get back to the game. Come on, let's go. And Charles would go, me, Tarzan. Go, 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 go. You, Jane. Wah, wah, wah. Well, Finally, you know, he's wearing the act thin. That's the trouble with amateurs. They keep pushing. And then he would sense it. And then he would go over to the smoking table, and he would pick up the Chicago phone directory. He would hold it up above his head. My phone book. Me kill. Me kill Chicago. And they're all watching because, you know, the fat, this big fat phone book, like it's an old Manhattan book. He'd rip it. Well, you have just seen how theater works out in the hinterlands. that's theater for people who don't know about Mary Martin and never heard about Gwen Verdun. Verdun? All right, Walt. Speaking of the Neolithic savages, do you have the commercial up there? And while you're readying the Buick commercial, this is WOR. You're a friendly, reliable, noisy spot on your dial. Where radio is vibrant. It's your sensitive radio station. As a matter of fact, I will tell you this. Now, I know something about radio. I've been around a few radio stations. You know, it's funny. You know, there are friendly radio stations. You know, Don, you've worked in radio stations before. There are friendly radio stations. There are dynamic radio stations that come out with the news, you know, and now here is the news, you know, that kind of a station. And then there's the ne'er-do-well stations, who do nothing but sing and dance and play all day long like the proverbial grasshopper. You know what I mean, you know, they're nothing. And now, here it is, number 30, kids, let's go, it's number 30, coming up on the old hip parade. That's the grasshopper station, but... Friendly old WOR, let me tell you here about this station. This is a very sensitive station. In fact, the people around here are so sensitive that there are some acts on this station. In fact, many acts on this station that have not talked to each other for as long as 10 years running. Oh, yes, they're that sensitive. Well, now, if you want to know what acts on this station are not talking to which ones, I would be glad to send it to you, plain sealed wrapper. If you would care to write to me in charge of Inside Cover-Up Rotten Story, care of WOR, AM and FM, New York. And speaking of Inside Cover-Up Stories, there it comes. Oh, wouldn't you really rather...
Wouldn't you really rather have a Buick? A Buick?
A Buick?
A Buick? Oh, wouldn't you really rather have a Buick than any other kind of car?
You may not be an animal lover until you see the new 1964 Buick Wildcat. It is the Wildcat.
The new Buick Crocodile.
325, 340, or 360. Transmission, 3-speed synchromesh, 4-speed stick shift.
Why don't they name them after great
cars? On a new Buick Super Turbine 400 automatic. It all adds up to the wildest thing on wheels.
The Buick Chipmunk.
Wildcat for 64. Above
the Buick
all,
Skunk.
It's a Buick.
So wouldn't you really rather have a Buick? A Buick? A Buick? Oh, wouldn't you really rather have a Buick? This year.
Gee, that was an exciting commercial. It really was. Now, we have here thousands of people here are relying on you. Send your 15 cents or your $10,000 to WOR Children's Christmas Fund. We have many children here on the staff, and they will have a good time this Christmas if you will shell out. Send it to Box 710. 710. Yes, 710 on your dial, and Box 710. That's the Clever Promotion Department. Got a special phone box here. Times Square Station, New York. Thank you. And now we once again return to the land of the living. And speaking of turtles... As long as we're going to talk about turtles, there's a news note out of Kenya, which tells, you know, that we're all human beings sitting around here scratching, whether the guys are living in Kenya or whether they're living in Queenia or whether they're living... That's out on the island, you know. Oh, that's a terrible. I hate to. You know, when the paucity of ideas, when the scarcity of true wit becomes so painful that we have to resort to that kind of rotten Ogden Nash sort of pun. We have a note from Quinya and from Kenya. And, oh boy, that's terrible. Listen, two persons here in Kenya, in Nakuru, Kenya, have claimed that they've been completely cured of backaches and lumbago by using an old Kikuyu tribe remedy, sitting on a turtle. Austin Riley, hospital laboratory technician, said he had had backaches since August when forced to give up golf after physiotherapy and exercise and pills and shots in the behind had failed to help. And so he went to an old native doctor. A Kikuyu employee at the War Memorial Hospital where he works told him of the cure. And by the way, this guy was not a native. He's native. He was just a guy there, see? Told him of the cure. And, quote, I did so. I sat on a turtle for a few seconds on Saturday. And on Monday, I was on the golf course. Incidentally, Miss E.A. Turner, the hospital's dietitian, who injured her back in a fall, claims to have also been cured by the same turtle. That same turtle, I understand, has been given many and numerous offers, but has accepted only one. He will appear on the Ed Sullivan Show in 3 weeks and will be interviewed by Carlton Fredericks 1 week later. He says it's something to do with B12. I'm sorry, I feel a little... Oh, cut it out there, gang. I feel in a very irreverent mood here. And, I wish I could get reverent. I think I could really make the scene if I could get somehow that. Speaking of making the scene, do you have my monster machine music in there, Don? I'll give you, yeah, that's it. I'll just give you the cue for it. You don't have to cue that thing up that you're just doing. Forget that one. Now, you know, we're always trying to figure out. There is one thing that has been behind us for a long time. It's been nipping and yapping and screaming at our heels for centuries. And I think we're about the only animal, really, which is worried about what it is. Really worried about what it is, the future of where it's going, where it's been, and why the devil it acts the way it does. I'm not quite so sure whether turtles ever look inward and rail at the paucity of life and the slobism of the majority of turtles. I just cannot see this. And yet, it's quite conceivably true that a turtle does sit around and rail about all the other turtles. All they do is sit around on logs. Yeah. Sit around on logs in the sun. They're not all curing mankind like a real turtle. Well, I don't know. And it's hard to find out. No matter where you go, people think somehow there is some guy someplace that's got the answer. Some guy somewhere has got the real answer of what mankind is all about, why we're here, where we're going, and what the final solution is, and the actual plan by which we can all live forever, happily, beautiful, and clean-limbed, and walking into eternal sunlight, right? I've been looking for that guy or that plan forever and ever and ever. And yet, you know, when you look at the nature of man himself, what he really does, what he really does, if you were to examine the behavior patterns of him, say the way you would examine the behavior pattern of the lesser carnivorous shrew, it's a very interesting thing, this man. Very interesting. Now, his relationships with his own creations have always fascinated me. What you think of your radio? What do you think of your TV set? What's it done to you? And I'm not talking about just the TV programs, the set itself. Is it a friend? Do you feel any rapport? Do you feel a sense of involvement when you see that old friendly Zenith sitting in the corner? The one that has the flop over trouble? Just like you have a bad knee, it has a poor sync circuit. Do you feel a sense of rapport with a car that has worn kingpins? Because you have trouble with your hip? Does a guy fall in love with his car? It's a good question, you know. Don't be so quick to answer it. Guys fall in love with guitars, you know. And they're just a piece of wood. They really are. You know, just a chunk of wood there. They'll fall madly in love with them, and they will say, well, no, that's different, you see. But it isn't. It's a piece of wood. And yet the relationship is so tenuous, it's so wild and so interesting, that you don't see very much about it. What people do about the relationship to the machine. And there are many things in the wind that, I don't know, it's a preliminary to a completely new age. For example, now, if you say you're a girl and you're a typist or a secretary, now, do you take all the hate that you may have, say, for your family, and let's say for your rotten job where you work 74 hours and get paid for 40? The son of a gun always says just about the time you're going to leave, Miss Watson, I hate to bother you, and I know you got a date, but look, could you just get these three, four letters out? Because they just got to get in the mail before 7, and I had the phone call that came in at 4:30. I couldn't dictate them, and the next thing you know, you're there till 6:30, and you're through at 5, you know that jazz? Well, do you take all that hate, that slow, terrible drift down, like a snow drift, a gentle snow drift of frustration, anger, do you focus it on your typewriter? In subtle ways. You see, you can't do anything to your boss. You can't hit him. You can't belt the time clock, because there isn't any. So what do? Do you drop eraser shavings down in the machinery when you're erasing, when you know you should brush them away, you know? Do you drop the eraser shavings down there so that the thing gets all bollocksed up and one day blows a fuse? You know? Many a guy, because he hates his wife, has wrecked his car. Because he has transferred the affection and the love he once had for her to this machine. And the last instant, as he's driving it into a culvert, says, I'll show you! Boom! And he's got the motor in his lap, and he's got the steering column through his thorax. And he showed Emily, boy. Emily, of course, is at home watching television or making the scene with the insurance man. But the point is that he has transferred a lot to this chick. You know, from this chick to this machine. Now, when you're involved in a thing for 8, 10, 12, 15 hours a day, does it become human to you? You know, those guys who walk around, have you seen this place over at the IBM World Headquarters over there on Madison and 57th, when they're walking around there at night? They're all by themselves. Maybe there's one, maybe two guys, and they're walking around, and all those big IBM machines are going, rewinding them. Does the guy begin to have a almost a paternal feeling towards old 707DL over there? And he knows all its idiosyncrasies, and the light keeps flickering because it's got a short in the screw base there, and he knows, it's all right, old boy. It's all right, old daddy will fix it. Boom, 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 it's going. And then in the end, you see, he begins to, as he recognizes old 702-03-A-DM over there, somehow knows something. It never gets bugged. It's always there. You see, it never gets bugged. Does that in turn bug the guy who walks around in front of this thing? Until one day, in a fit of desperation, after he's really been bugged, his chick has, you know, gone out and made the scene with somebody else, and he's had trouble with the transmission on the Ford and the whole scene. Finally, he comes in, and 707 is unperturbed. It's raining, and everything that bugs human beings does not bother old 707 GL2DM. And it goes, goo, 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 boo, 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 boo. So he just goes over, and without saying anything, he goes, doom, 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 18 buttons at once. It goes, unk, 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 do, 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 unk. Overload relay goes out. And then he turns around. He has killed it, you see, as far as he can ever kill it without being thrown in jail, like throwing a brick at it. So he's killed it. Now, he did it thinking he made a mistake. He said, oh boy, did I louse up that time. Oh, boy. Hey, Chief! Hey, Chief! Oh, crying out loud. I'm sorry, Chiefy. Oh, gee whiz. Wow. Am I embarrassed? Look what I did. I wasn't thinking. I hit 7-2 and 28 and the digital computer reflex knob all at once. I don't know what happened with me. And it just, well, you know how those things go. So it's 17 weeks in the shop. for old 702 GLDM. And old Chucky's walking around with that big slot. Was a big hole in the floor there where where old DM sat there and sneered at him for weeks. He says, ah, ha, 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 da, da, dee, 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 da, da. When he finds suddenly peace, sneaky, rotten peace. You see, until one day they wreck, you know, the truck backs up to the back of the building. Out comes old DM with a new coat of paint and a new set of overload relays and the new improved cathode follower circuit, which makes him go doo, 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 twice as fast. And the whole rotten cycle starts all over again, only in spades. Well, I've worked in steel mills. And there was a fascinating piece, and I have to bring the steel mill into this because, you know, a guy who works around gigantic machines, really big machines. Now, most of us here in New York, because of the fact that our work is largely abstract, you know, writers and guys who work over at the, you know, the Benton and Bowles office and guys who work over in Leverhouse and all that, you know, it's largely talking a lot of cocktail parties and the work, the real work, you know, they don't really make soap at the Lever House over here, you know. There is a place way out somewhere in the Midwest where they got fantastic soap vats, and guys walk around them, and they hiss and steam and bellow, and great big things roar, and overload relays go. And those guys walk around them both afraid and in love with them, because you see, the machines bring them their livelihood, and at the same time have the ability to kill them. What do you think that does to a guy? How do you think he acts about those machines? A lot of guys turn their backs on them. They're scared of them. They're so scared, it's like they're, you know, have you known people who were so afraid of the boss, they wouldn't even look him in the eye. They wouldn't even go near his office. They like to believe that if they stayed down there near the file department, hidden behind a big potted plant, right next to the water cooler, and if they moved, if they moved that big file, the number two file, if they moved that to the right, they could even hide the door from themselves, and they could hide there next to the window. And all day long, the boss wouldn't see them. See, and for year in and year out, they could escape the boss. Well, this is the way guys are with their machines. Funny thing, funny bit. I've seen guys just turn their back on the 100-inch rolling mill for years. And that old mill, boy, that old roll is going, boom, ka-doom, boom, jung, 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 boom, 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 boom. And he's, you know, he's walking around with his back to it. It's like, da, 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 boom, 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 Well, he's afraid to look it in the eye. He's also afraid to look his wife in the eye. He was also afraid to look the chick in the eye, the first one he ever took to the Orpheum Theater when he was 12. And somehow he's related that same ineffable mystery to that big machine back of him. You know, men know this thing. I don't know. Women never. I'm sure women don't know this because I've never seen it shine from their eyes. Have you heard of the ineffable mystery of woman? Woman. I'm talking to you, chick. You've heard the expression, the mystery of woman? What do you think that means? Do you think that means Helena Rubinstein? Oh, get it out of your skull, baby. No, no. A pair of laughing, dancing, elfin eyes? Well, it means a little more than that. It does not mean the center fold-out in Playboy, either, I can tell you that. See, that's man's attempt to defeat the mystery of women by reducing it to a rotten picture. Very bad picture of a girl looking out of a shower. It says, Little Sandra Whoopi, playgirl for December, playmate for December, reads Kant and speaks lovingly and glowingly of old Fred Schopenhauer. She is a philosophy major, and as we see her now stepping out of the shower, she is about to turn on her fantastic collection of Dave Brubeck records. And, Daddy, if you were around, Whoopi, what fun. That kind of thing, you know. You could talk philosophy with her. Well, that's an attempt to reduce her to a ridiculous thing, and it's not true. They can't, you see. So the mystery of woman, whatever that thing is, has bugged men forever. Right, Don? They don't look quite like... Do you know there was another time, there was another age, when men, the philosopher Plato among them, with several others, who said women were completely of another species. Yeah, you know, it's like, you know how you can't understand the cat, people? You know, you invest the cat with all kinds of supernatural powers and stuff. Well, they don't. They just walk around and scratch. catch mice, dig holes in the ground, look around. But yet we continually invest them with this, some whatever this thing is. Whatever it is. Well, so it is with men re-women. Now, I don't care how cool they are, no matter how much they pretend, oh, come on, this guy's a nut. I could just see seven guys, you know, named Barry saying, this guy's a nut. You're not fooling me, Jack. Nor are you fooling yourself. The ineffable mystery of women. Somehow, this mystery, which in a sense is related to the ability of a woman to completely do without a man, this is the truth. Men are really expendable. The ability of women to do that and the ability of women to generate life mysteriously. It really is, you know. Even doctors are a little gassed by that, you know. They haven't quite yet figured it out, you know. And yet this chick doesn't say anything, sits over there by the radiator looking out of the window. She knows the secret. You know. She's sitting over there knitting a doily and not saying anything. Oh, this drives guys. All right, tell me about it. What are you thinking? What are you thinking? She says, what? Nothing, Charlie. Oh, yeah, well, there you go, chickening out. And then he sits over there for a while, and it goes on and on and on. It's a very subtle relationship. Yes, indeed. You know that almost every play written, or every play that I know of, and where people are having a fantastic battle, and it's a strange, wild thing, you know, about the sexes, is a man. Albie is an example. O'Neill, Williams, the whole... You just cannot imagine a woman writing anything by Williams. Just impossible. Because they know, you know. No mystery to them. They are the mystery, you see. The raven in Poe's poem is not confused why he says nevermore. Or she. I would suspect that raven is a she. You know, see, I don't think that he even mentioned whether it's he or she. The raven just looks out and says, nevermore. Yes, rocking, knocking, tapping at my cottage door. Nevermore. There's a man. He kept saying, oh, what do you mean? What do you mean? Nevermore. Doing, doing. Well, so man, have you noticed that man always refers to machines as she, old Betsy? They'll hit the trunk. Old Betsy here. Yes, sir, old Betsy. Great big fantastic ships which seem to go... have you ever been on a big ship? A big ship really is mysterious, boy. I mean, it vibrates with some kind of a funny life, and it feels dangerous. Oh, a big ship feels like it can kill anything. You know, just tremendous thing. It just goes through the water. It's alive, and it's got all kinds of little passageways and secret places and one thing and another. This big thing goes through the night. They always call ships she. Never heard of a ship called Old Fred. Now, they may name it Fred W. McNutt. Yes, they do, but they never call it Old Fred. They say she. Somebody said, what do you mean it's Fred W. McNutt? The SS Fred W. McNutt. Yep, she's a good ship. Just the way it is. Just the way it is. I'm telling you, and when the automobile manufacturers understand this, they'll start selling cars, boy. When they start naming them like Clytemnestra. Oh, yeah, you know. Just name it, just a simple name like Audrey. I mean, just lay it out there. The new Buick Audrey. Or Blanche Dubois. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Well, it's just a very different problem. So men have always somehow transferred the mystery of life to the machine. And here is a little bit that came out of the New York Times advertising section. Now, you wouldn't expect to find the truth, you know, just when they're writing about advertising. I still maintain that you will get more truth in the little back pages of the newspapers next to the truss ads. You know, that kind of stuff. And the ads for art photos. You know, and in the back with the nutty section of the Times, you know, where they're selling you telescopes made out of plastic and Japanese water wings and all that stuff in the back there. Sandwiched in between that stuff, you will find sneaky little things. Thusly.
Boom, bow, doom, bow. Industry marches on. There's industry, ineffable mystery. mysterious, immense, electronic, dynamic, water-driven, mystery-driven, cosmic-driven industry, the giant clockwork, the enormous devil clockwork of time and life, marches on. Boom, boom, boom. Boom, bow, boom, bow.
In several British coal mines lately, the machinery has begun to talk. My name is Betsy, a giant rock crusher may say to its operator. You are a lot more intelligent than I am, so handle me with care. Did you hear that? Or were you looking somewhere else? I repeat, his machine says, my name is Betsy. You are a lot more intelligent than me, so handle me with care. The machines now being used experimentally by Britain's National Coal Board use concealed loudspeakers in an effort to encourage miners to take greater safety precautions. Conventional devices to promote mine safety posters and safety film, for example, proved unsuccessful in curtailing the mounting accident rate. Finally, coal officials asked Mr. Dichter's organization, which he's an excellent motivational research man, to study the problem here in Britain. The research experts decided that miners regarded the automatic machinery with great hostility, if not outright hate, and took pride in how roughly and carelessly they could treat them. Accidents happen. Mr. Dichter believes that the miners will grow fond of the machines now and treat them with the proverbial tender, loving care now that they have feminine voices and friendly personalities. And so, giant, inevitable industry named Betsy, named Amy and Blanche, not to mention little Emily over in the corner, the flying shears machine with its cutting, grinding blades, marches on, marches on.
I am Emily. I am Emily, the friendly cutting shears machinery. Get close to me, Charles, and I will grind you into coleslaw.
And no wonder a man can fall in love with a machine that says to him,
you are much more intelligent than I am. Please take care of me.
Is there a wife out there tonight who ever says that to her husband? In this 20th century world, this McCall's world, this world of the Ladies' Home Journal, this world of the hard-hitting dynamic lady novelist, the dynamic harlequin-glassed lady executive.
My name is Emily. The flying shears machine. You are much more intelligent than I am. So please take care of me.
Yes, man knows where to go for his love today. Oh, yes. There's many ramifications here. Do you notice the use of feminine voice? They never say, hey, this is Charlie. This is Charlie, the 100-inch plate mill rolling grinder. You get near me, Dad, and I'll just knock you off, you know. I'll belt you one and a kiss, huh? But if you take care of me, I'm all right. I'm your friend. Oh, no. Oh, no. If one man runs into another man that is capable of rolling 100-inch plates into long, thin sheets 14 miles long and 7 inches wide and 3 milli-inches thick, he ain't gonna take him that friendly, loving care.
This is Emily. I can roll sheets 17 miles long. I can do all these fantastic... But you're more intelligent than I am. You come and tickle my relays. You can just take care of me and I'll take care of you. I am the great mother of us all.
Now, man's relationship, you see, most women hardly ever run into the real big killer machines. The real killer machines. Women have had their experience with machines, of course, but generally the machines they work with are things, you know, like typewriters. They fool with little things like, once in a while, a car with an automatic shift, you know, they think they're the real killer machines. Let me tell you. I want to tell you, they had a drop forge. A really big drop forge in Inland Steel. And when I would approach, have you ever seen a Bessemer converter? Let me tell you something about a Bessemer converter, baby. And you can see why men stand in awe of it. And in the same way, they stand in awe of a woman because a woman does this thing. Yeah, I'll get you any time. Wait, when do we do off? All right, fine, I'll give you the cue. You see, women have this problem of not really standing next to Bessemer converters often. They don't know the fear that a man feels for this vast machinery that he's created. No wonder he gives it magical qualities, mystical qualities. I remember there was, and it's going to sound ridiculous, but there was a Bessemer converter at Youngstown Sheet and Tube, and I was just a kid. I was 16. I was running around in the summertime working as a mail deliverer. And I'd run around the mill all day long. It was right on the shores of Lake Michigan, and one of the most terrible moments every day was when I had to go near, right next to it, run up a long iron catwalk up to a little tiny scales office up the top, next to this fantastic, unbelievable, gigantic, fire-breathing monster known as a Bessemer converter. Now, a Bessemer converter is just that. It converts, it's a converter. It converts basic materials into steel. And it's a huge cauldron, a fantastic thing. Now, this is not the thing that you see the pictures of all the time, you know, the big ladle in the open hearth. Oh, no. This is like an enormous tank that's stories high, and it goes... It shoots sparks 20 stories in the air. It goes all day long, and then it tilts by itself. And these guys are living next to it, and they kept calling it Clara. They kept calling it Clara. Clara. Good old Clara. Until one day, Clara blew up. Killed 17 men in, at least, at the most, really, 10 seconds. Clara finally gave it to every last one of them. They knew she would one day. Just the way every man suspects one day his chick will.
This is WOR Radio.